The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, how does that sound? Let's begin. I had the idea to do something a little bit different this morning, maybe, which is first to just ask for any questions, any questions about meditation practice, your practice, anything you would like to share about your experience of sitting this morning, or in your sittings, or in your practice. And just to give you a little bit of background on that, I, over the past few weeks in various classes or venues here, we've been exploring this factor of investigation. This quality of mind that explores experience, but not through thinking. Usually we think about investigation as, analyzing something, thinking about it. But this sense of investigation is using mindfulness, using awareness in a certain kind of way. So I can certainly talk about it and give some examples, but in a way it's kind of maybe be more relevant or interesting for you if the examples actually, relate to you in some way, or something that, even as simple as, there was a lot of thinking in the meditation, or there was restlessness, or there was boredom, or, thank you.
So I'm wondering how do we continue the practice when there's some kind of stressful situations. What I've noticed is that I'm able to maintain my practice every day, but when things happen and it's kind of really, really stressful, Then probably I need more meditation of them, but I'm not even able to. I don't even have the motivation to go and sit down.
Yeah.
So I kind of take a couple days break, then I get back. So I don't know if that is like, if there is anything.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. I mean, does anyone else relate to that or have that experience of the difficulty of keeping up a regular sitting practice? Or, a couple of things to say. Just specifically about that, and then maybe to relate it a little bit to this theme of investigation. One thing is that many of us find that the times that we need the practice the most also tend to be the times that it's most difficult to practice, and it's almost like noticing that difficulty. Noticing the kind of momentum, the movement of mind that's like, I don't have time to do this, or this is, not the motivation to do it or something. That itself can sometimes be a mindfulness bell that's saying, something's happening here. In a general sense, just to say that there's a very honored role in spiritual practice or meditation practice for one's difficulties, working with the difficulties. It's easy to think that only when, my mind gets quiet or my life gets sorted out, or I get more flexible in the knees or the hips or something, then I can really meditate, then I can really practice. But actually, one of the very freeing insights of practice is that the difficulties themselves are the practice. Rather than being something to get through so we can do the practice and, you know, have concentration and have insight, actually the difficulties are like the compost that makes the soil really rich. And we can get concentrated on our difficulties, we can learn from them, we can have insight from them, but it requires engaging with them in a particular kind of way. So that's another thing. And then the third thing is something about getting very curious and very interested in that those thoughts, those feelings, that time, those around that stress, to really learn how to investigate that with mindfulness, with awareness. So in a way, that's the topic. I guess a question for you is, when something stressful happens, what do you do? How do you relate to it? How do you deal with it?
So I think I'm talking about stress, say like 1 to 10 scale, what I consider more than 7. So like the IRS audit, not having job, my wife just moved to New York. So a lot of things happen.
Yeah.
Or when I have like some kind of arguments with my wife, that's also like more than seven. If it's less, I continue my practice and all. If it's really high stress, then I basically sleep. Or I just I watch movies, which I don't do that. I don't like to sit down and watch movies all day.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is something I do, just kind of basically laziness, and I don't move. So, and that's the reason I don't have energy to do mindfulness practice either.
I'll come back to that. But, yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. Is anyone else? Anyone else want to share anything?
Yeah. Boy, I can relate to that. Is it on? Yeah, I can relate to those days when I just want to go unconscious, basically. I don't want to sit and face it. But normally I do. It was interesting, an inquiry came up this morning that I tried. So there's this self in me that's very sticky and can take over and sabotage everything. So shame-based self, so very sticky. And I sense that there's a different way to be with this energy than I've known before, but it's unknown to me. And if I knew it, it would be there. So it's like this whole thing that's, I don't know. Everything else is what I've tried, right? Everything else is what I've tried, and I know a lot. I have lots of insights. I've been working on this for 30 years. Probably longer. So the question that came up this morning was, what's another way through? Except when I asked that question, I grasped. There was the fix-it energy came in, like it triggered the, oh, I'm going to try to find it, you know? It didn't have that open nothingness to it. So I wondered what, I mean, at another point, I'll just say this, there's a light of awareness and this energy just being there. And I could feel a little bit like there's this bridging that's wanting to happen from the light of awareness and this darkness. It's like maybe could just sit in that. But what would be a question that would help me be in the non-fix-it mode but open to whatever this transcendent element is that wants to come forward?
Thank you. That's I think all of us can relate to, you know, some kind of a sticky self, you know, that gets caught around something. I mean, in a way, the primary question of investigation is something like, what is this really? You know, what is this? What is this? Or what's really here? And it's an open-ended inquiry in the sense of really truly being, you know, sort of embracing that not knowing, and then letting the mindfulness, letting the awareness, you know, letting that, you know, something come up in the system. And even, I mean, while it can be very helpful to identify, you know, emotions, if there's sadness or shame or something that's, you know, definitely that's a side of investigation that's sort of like teases apart the strands of experience. And what's helpful about that is when there's just some amorphous mood, you know, or some fog, you know, when we can really see what's there in the specificity, we're bringing our being, we're aligned with something that's true. We're seeing, oh, this is true. This is what's really happening for me. And there's something freeing just in that, even if it's still there. So that's one side of investigation. And then this other side of not being so fast, not being so quick to put a label on something and to put a label on an experience, because in a way that can sometimes limit the investigation. Oh, it's shame. I know that. That's the same thing. And the, you know, and whereas the experience you're having right now is here, is now, is you've never had this experience before. And that, even though it may be a pattern or something that you recognize time and time again, allowing some kind of freshness to it. Often with something that's recurring, or especially a mood or an emotional state, a difficult emotional state, investigation, it can be very helpful if investigation takes the form of looking at the experience from different angles, especially from finding it in the body. You've practiced this way, or you know, you've worked on, you know, because an experience will have an energetic component, a physical component, a cognitive, and finding it in the body, bringing in often what can be missing in investigation is the sense of care, compassion. It's very easy, especially when we're dealing with ourselves. You know, we're dealing with someone else's pain. You know, we kind of think like, oh, I should be compassionate or something. You know? But investigation is, when it's partnered with care, compassion, kindness, it makes a big difference. You know, how, you know, what's the tone of voice that we're asking the question in? You know, and is there some subtle or not so subtle pushing, some judgment, some, you know, you should have figured this out by now, or, you know, just noticing it, just noticing it. But there's a good chance if if we're getting stuck, if we're getting caught, there's something we're not seeing, you know? And it's not like we can force ourselves to see more. We can gently have that, we can incline the mind towards that. But it's like one of the other points I wanted to bring up about investigation is in dealing with helping us to figure out where our blind spots may be. And one of the difficult things about blind spots is that we're blind to them in a way. So often the only time how do we know what we're not seeing? Well, we know, one way we know is when we bump into ourselves, bump into other people. Another way we know is when there's another person in our lives who may trigger us in a certain way. You know, it's like, that person is so irritating. They always do that. Or so, when our reaction to something or someone may be out of proportion, seems like it's out of proportion, that's sometimes a sign that we're bumping up in blind spots. So again, these are very, very helpful, juicy areas to investigate, to look at. I don't know if that helps, but it gives you, yeah.
What feels really helpful was kind of the first thing you said, yeah. And towards the end, is just genuinely not knowing. Going back to the place of genuinely not knowing what's going on, to open up the space, and then a surrender. That's the word I can relate to in the part that wants to fix it is attached to the solution, you know, all that, to really just surrender that there's this part of me that doesn't know, that's blind, that, and then just sit with that and have the inquiry come from there.
Beautiful.
I mean, the inquiry is just being in the not knowing in a sense.
Yeah, beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. And something about that not knowing, it's like, I think there's some connection to faith and trust and confidence. And the more, just like that paradox of practice, that we gain wisdom and insight through this willingness to not know and willingness to be open. So,
Yeah, I've just found over about 15 years of practicing that the important thing is just to be patient with meditation and trust that there will be long-term results even if you don't get short-term immediate results. And sometimes short-term results. And sometimes if you don't immediately get what you're expecting, that's what you're supposed to be getting, this not getting. And I've sometimes, you know, after a year I've looked back, oh yeah, this has changed, but it doesn't come the way you want it to come. And
No, that's great. I thank you.
That's why Buddhism is not like some other religions.
As much as we want instant gratification, I mean, what. You want to grab a mic? Yeah.
The way I relieve stress and anxiety is through breathing exercise. I do specifically is a breathing exercise from India.
Yeah.
Called alternate nasal breath. You breathe in through one side and then you hold it. You're breathing alternating between two, you know, hold one side, breathe in, hold it, then you...
Do you physically hold the nostril or
yes.
You can just...
And then you breathe out the other side and you hold it. And it has a shift it changes the brain activity.
Mm. So
you become really calm. It really works.
When do you find that...
I do it every time I come here, but because I'm doing this, I feel kind of funny, and I wait until everybody comes in. And I,
Oh, and then you do it in here. Yeah.
When I come here.
During the sitting.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. There are so many yogic breathing practices, and you didn't ask me what I think, but I'll share with you. I think that is, that's fine to do, and that's you know, if you find that helpful and you find that, it might be interesting to explore doing just part of a period with that, you know, so a mix of some kind of active yogic practice, and then sort of like letting go of that and being, maybe you do this, maybe letting go of that, and then just bringing the mindfulness and, you know, the investigation or whatever into the, you know, how you are then, you know, how that, exploring that state of calm, just for the reason that that calm, like in the insight tradition, calmness is not so much of a end in and of itself, even though it's useful, it's beautiful, it can sometimes be very skillful, especially if the mind is activated. We're trying to cultivate calm, and then from that calm, to investigate or to look in a certain kind of way. So, Yeah, great.
I don't do that breathing all the time. Then I stop.
Yeah.
And then I try to
examine. Yeah, yeah, no, that's great. That's great. But, you know, I don't do something that similar, but often when I sit down and I give a lot of priority to the breath, just being with the breath and getting into the rhythm of the breathing, and that's sort of like a calming, an anchor, and then from that space of calm, it's interesting to look and investigate. So, yeah, thank you. Did you want to say something? Or did you have a? I thought you were raising your hand, but I just put you on the spot. Yeah.
One of the things that I walked down here and I was doing walking meditation, and I noticed that as you're walking, something would irritate me or something would make me very happy or whatever, and I would label it, you know, happy, irritation, whatever, and then let it go. And then you said something about the investigation of what would be the reason or why would I continue to keep looking at something, or that was just what came up.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. In the more general sense, you know, sometimes this practice is called mindfulness meditation, and that's, you know, that's come into the culture right now, and that is the sort of core practice that we do. But if you notice, like this center, for example, is not called the Mindfulness Meditation Center, it's called the Insight Meditation Center. And so it's just interesting to think, what is the connection or what's the relationship between mindfulness and insight? And so what I would say is that mindfulness is in some way in the service of insight, in the service of, so the larger purpose of practice is to develop some kind of understanding about that, not only just to be with experience, but to understand something about the nature of experience, the nature of that experience, the nature of all of our experience. And the bridge, maybe the bridge between these two, mindfulness and insight, is this quality of investigation. So at a certain point, investigation is really just applied mindfulness in a certain way. So for your example, if you're walking, and this is one of the great practices that one time Gil gave me this practice to do on a long flight, on a long airplane. I said, oh, how can I practice on this 12-hour flight? You know, and he said, oh, that's easy. Just sit there and just, you know, cultivate some kind of contentment. You know, just relax, content, you're fine, you're here. And then notice when you lose that sense of ease. Something comes up, something, you know, whether it's a thought, whether it's a uncomfortable sensation, whether, you know, some mood or something, and then investigate that. Not so much in thinking about why did that happen or why did I think that, but just looking at it, bringing mindfulness to it in a certain kind of open-ended, interested, curious way. So, which is not to say that we need to investigate every single thought or emotion that comes up. For myself, and you know, maybe this would help you, and this is, if it's easy enough to let go of that, you know, if like something comes up, like a thought, it's like, oh, I wonder what I'll have for lunch. You know, there's not that much charge to it, and then I just see it as a thought, and then that kind of just disappears, and then it's pretty easy to kind of come back to the body and the breath. If there's something that comes up that has a charge to it, or that feels sticky enough that it's pulling me away from the body, the breath, the moment, then that can be very interesting to investigate and bring mindfulness to it. So in your example, walking here, you said this, an irritation that came up, and then, so what did you, how did you, you know, so you noticed it as an irritation, or you noticed it afterwards maybe, or, you know, what did you, how did you work with it, or how did you?
So the irritation was, as I was walking, I was counting cars, and it's like, it should be quiet. It should be, you know, past commute time. I should be walking. Nobody should be here.
Yeah.
And I had all these should things.
Yeah.
And then I realized I was doing that. And so then I started thinking about, why am I doing that? And then I said, I was just being negative. And then I just said, okay, move on. And then, well, there's a pretty flower, and then, you know, that type of stuff. So, but I didn't really stay in it. I didn't investigate, you know, why I was feeling that way and stuff like that. So maybe that's the next piece of it.
Yeah. I mean, it could be just as simple as being willing to stay with, you know, if some negativity arises or some judging or some experience, just being willing to stay in that. Once you notice it's happening, it's like when you notice it's happening, the mindfulness that notices and that, you know, investigation to look a little more closely, that itself can sometimes change the ecology of the mind. You know, it can change, you know, just that willingness to kind of, oh, there's some negativity here. That immediately gives some distance from it. And that immediately, so, you know, it's natural. Most of us want to sort of move on from something that's, because it's unpleasant, you know, because it's, so investigation might be just a simple willingness to hang out with something that's unpleasant a little bit longer than we, you know, just in an interested way. It's like, oh, that's interesting, you know, that negative thinking, it also, you know, it had this physical, you know, it also sort of, I noticed there was a little agitation in the body, or I noticed that one negative thought sort of brought on another negative thought. You know, just as simple as that. And then it could be like, okay, let it go, open up, see, enjoy the sunshine. You know, that's fine. But just to have in the mind that there's some value in exploring what's unpleasant, what's, you know that it's not like it's wrong to have, you know, expectations or negative thoughts or something. We all have them. And they're really an opportunity. They're an opportunity to see something, and it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then slowly over time, that can change our relationship. When something that comes up that's unpleasant, we don't immediately get caught in it, but there can be a kind of, oh, great, you know, now I can, you know, learn from this and see this. So investigation is often asking the question, what is this? What would be helpful right now? That's another great question for investigation. What would be helpful? You know, sometimes what would be helpful would be totally a kind of antidote to if there's some negative mood, like or something. You know, like if you're really angry, you feel really like lashing out at someone. It might be really helpful to go outside and scream, or you know, or just you know, shake your fist at the sky, or you know, something that really releases that energy. There may not be enough mindfulness or patience or whatever to just sit and look with it and be with it. And then the question for investigation is often, what can I learn from this? You know, so there can be a lot of insight in just noticing how expectations work. You know, we expect. I was driving here and I got off. I don't know if any of you took the freeway. You're probably more local than I am, but I got off of coming down from the city and got off on 280 on Edgewood Road, and there was a lot of traffic. And immediately my mind went, there shouldn't be traffic on this exit, you know, and there's never traffic, you know, and then it was backed up. And then I thought, oh, well, maybe that's because there's more development in Redwood City and there's more, you know, startups and people are coming, you know. And I just kind of totally, you know, and then, you know, this. Anyway, that's. Did you want to say something? Or did you? No. Right.
Just a clarifying question. So, what I gathered about investigation is basically being in and experiencing the emotion, whatever it is, and not about actually why it came. So that's like the kind of the logical investigation, I think. So you're talking more about like somatic or kind of experiential investigation, like feeling it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. The word investigation is maybe a little bit. It's sort of the word we're stuck with, but maybe it's a little bit unfortunate because it. We tend to think that we investigate something through thinking, and through analyzing it, but this is really investigation. It implies. An application of mindfulness in a certain way. And so there, you know, I mean, I find it helpful to think about it in a few ways. One is that investigation as looking more closely to see more details for something. You know, so it's one thing to say, okay, I'm breathing and I know the breath is happening. I know there's an in-breath or an out-breath. But on another level, there is no such thing as a breath. You know, a breath is a concept. And the actual experience of breathing is made up of much, of various sensations. You know, so investigation is often answering the question, how do I know this experience is happening? So if you say, how do you know you're breathing? It's like, well, there's movement, there's pressure, there's warmth, there's, you know, there's a sense of air here, there's a, you know, there's the difference between that and they're saying, oh, I'm breathing. Or how do I know I'm angry or sad? Well, there's this kind of thinking, there's this kind of physical sensation, this kind of energy. So looking more closely, seeing more details is one element of investigation. Another element, which is a little more of the classic piece in the suttas, is distinguishing between different mind states. So one of the Pali of investigation is actually the two words dhamma vichaya. Dhamma could be a lot of things, but in this phrase, it's referring to phenomena, or referring to states. And then vichaya has the meaning of sorting or distinguishing. So very often in the Buddha's teachings, he talks about know when there's anger in the mind, and know when the mind is free from anger. Know when there's desire in the mind, and just notice when the mind doesn't have desire. You know, so know when there's calm and concentration, and know when there isn't. So that's this other element of just looking. The way I think about it is looking at experience through the lens of Dharma, you know, through the lens of these mental qualities, if that makes sense. I mean, it's in a more simple way, you could just say, is what I'm doing, or what I'm thinking about doing, is this helpful? Will this be helpful? Will this be lead towards more freedom, more ease, more happiness? Will this lead towards more suffering? So that's sort of the dharmic piece of investigation. And then, like we were saying before, something about this willingness to not know, this willingness to... you probably heard the expression beginner's mind, you know, from Suzuki Roshi Zen Center, and we may think, oh, I'm not an expert on anything, but I'm an expert on my own problems, you know, or my expert on my own, you know, and to be willing to bring that sort of beginner's mind or not knowing mind to the things that feel closest to us, the patterns, the habits that feel the oldest, or the people in our lives who we think, well, I know them and how they'll react, or I know. You know, that's where beginner's mind really is profound, because to be willing to see someone or to see ourselves with fresh eyes is this part of this piece of investigation.
I don't know if this is an inquiry question, but something about what you're saying reminds me of one of my typical questions in daily mindfulness, like during life. What in the heck do I be mindful to? There's like so much going on. I guess it's the same thing in sitting meditation. There's awareness and being aware of the nothing and in the nothing and all that. And then there's my thoughts, and then there's my feelings, and then there's, if I'm daily life, there's, or how I'm sitting, and then there's the toothbrush, and then there's and the sounds, you know, and I say, okay, be mindful, be mindful, be mindful. And I just get lost sometimes.
Yeah. No, thank you. That's a great question.
I feel like it matters because it's all about where we direct our attention.
Yeah.
At least I feel, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. The, a couple things come to mind. One is that there's this saying, if it's not simple, it's not vipassana. And, you know, and that can sometimes be a good counter to this, you know, because it's true. If we have the intention of being mindful of absolutely everything in our experience all the time, you know, we feel like maybe our head will explode or something, or it's too scattering, or it's too... So the classical instructions are to be with the experience that's predominant. You know, and so what does that mean? really. But it's like if you have a sitting practice, or you know, often we give the instruction to cultivate an anchor, you know, which may be the breathing. It could be the breathing at the belly or the nostrils, or it could be just a whole body awareness. It could be opening to sounds, but something that's a little bit of a touchstone. So that's very useful. And then the idea is that in meditation practice, to not be in conflict with our experience. So if something is coming up that has more of a pull, or that's more predominant than the breathing, for example, or the body, then we turn to that, you know, emotion or something. In daily life, I mean, the classic Zen answer is to be with, you know, it's sort of like to give 100% of your intention to whatever or whoever you're with in the moment. So when you're chopping the carrots, your whole being is just poured into that knife and is just chopping, and you're just totally with it. And then when someone interrupts you, you, without any stickiness, it's just, oh, you put down the utensil, the knife, and you just turn to the person, and then you give them that attention, that care, that. And so, I mean, it's a little bit idealistic, but it's, you know, there's a certain part of the freedom of that style of practice is the lack of stickiness between being able to move between these different things in life. Sometimes Gill calls that as enlightenment, as a willingness to be interruptible. You know, so, yeah.
Well, in a way, I agree with you. For me, the way I understand is, we have a myriad of so many events and thoughts, just like almost often, I see myself autopilot. You know, thought just goes miles away, and all this taking just flying to everywhere. So, what I learned from these instructions, especially mindfulness, is basically bring yourself back here and now.
Right.
We cannot follow every single motion and feelings and, oh God, I have to be mindful. I put myself a lot of pressure into that. I can never do that. But quite often, I see myself autopilot, thoughts, words. So I bring myself to here and now. That's been helpful.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful, beautiful. Yeah, I hope that was picked up by the. I won't ask you to repeat it on the microphone, but but just this idea of, you know, you're saying of coming back to here and now, coming that groundedness of, and it's true. Sometimes mindfulness practice can seem like a lot of doing, so it's like, when you notice that it feels like there's a lot of doing, a lot of shoulds, a lot of chasing things, it's like, yeah, something like letting all of that go and coming back to right here, and just the side of mindfulness that's almost effortless, you know, that you're always here, in a sense. We're always having experience. And so... orienting towards that rather than reaching out to something is great. And then sometimes in practice there can be this sense of, rather than following things that happen, it's like you're here and things are just coming to you. you know, the cessation comes and a thought comes or a sound comes, and you're like in the middle. And you don't have to move, you don't have to do anything, and then just experience comes, and you're just knowing it, you're just seeing it. That, I think it's Ajahn Chah who has the quote about the, if you want to visit with all the different animals in the jungle, in the forest, it's really inefficient to kind of go out and try to find this one and find that one and follow the footpaths of this one and that one. But what you do is you just sit by the watering hole and you just wait, because they all have to drink water. So they all come to you. They all come there. And you're just there and you're just watching them as they come. So if we just sit here, you know, everything comes to us. You know, with patience, with, you know, Yeah, well, thank you for that. Did you?
Yeah. I don't always quite connect well to the term mind states. I guess it's because I feel that the mind shouldn't be sticky. And I guess if I feel it's in a state, it's sticky. I think more in terms of mind processes or something, but... but I guess it's the mind state is something that's sort of happening or something. But I've never been quite. Mind state sounds like it's frozen or something.
Yeah. But yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. It's usually mind state is the translation for, at least in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, is the translation for citta, the Pali word citta, which is sometimes also translated as mind or heart or consciousness or something. Mind state, I think it's probably more accurate to say they're of course they're mind processes, but they're sort of mind patterns or something, you know, that's a process that's sort of a constellation into a pattern. So the classic, you know, emotions are one example of a mind state, you know, so you could be in an emotion or there could be an emotion that's happening. But even the word emotion has movement, motion, you know, it's not a static thing. And then in the Buddhist sense, a mind state could also be something like... lust could be a mind state. Is that an emotion? Well, not exactly an emotion, but I mean, there's a certain,
yeah,
you know,
emotions make more sense than mind states,
I mean. Yeah. I guess mind state is just a little bit more of, it's a little wider in the sense of from the understanding of how mind works. In each moment of consciousness, there's always a mind state. You know, there's always... So maybe you could say there's always an emotion, but that's a little bit more problematic to say. I mean, there's some, often there's emotion, but in any, you know, according to the Buddhist psychology, there's always a mind state. There's always something... some kind of something coloring the perception. But anyway, yeah. Well, okay. Well, thank you for indulging me in this open-ended exploration of investigating experience. And the only thing I'd like to say just to close is that something about the sense of wonder that, you know, and it comes back to not knowing, it comes back to just really being open to that we don't know what the next moment will bring. We don't know, even in terms of sitting, I find one of the things that helps me, you know, coming back to Raghu, what you said about the difficulty sometimes of getting back to the cushion and just finding that is like, when I think that I know what the sitting will be like, oh well, if I just sit down, it will just, you know, just be with the breath or this or that, or think about this. that sort of closes it off, and that is not so interesting to me. So it's not so, I'm less likely to want to meditate. But when there's this, just remembering of the kind of the mystery of, and just the preciousness of having this jewel of awareness, of consciousness, and not knowing, you know, the wonder of that. And anyway, that is very exciting to me. That's, you know, that's the spirit of discovery, of exploration, of wonder, is also part of this quality of investigation. So, anyway, thank you very much. Yeah. I'll be up there. So, thank you. I just stop.